by their presence.
The roll shows 16 members present.
Please stand for the invocation by our chaplain today, Major Nyla Fankhauser from the Salvation Army.
Lord, this is indeed a diverse Senate body, just as the people of our state are a diverse people. Different races, different cultures, backgrounds, and different beliefs. You have made us all different. We have many different names for you, God, but we all come to you for guidance and help. Today, I pray that you will use the diversity within this body as within our state, not as a weakness, but as our strength. As we share with one another, work together, may we do our best to see from the other's point of view. Walk a mile in his moccasins, if you will, and be the richer for it. As these senators, each different, bring their agendas to the table, may the needs of all their constituents be considered, from the smallest, farthest village in the interior to this capital city to urban Anchorage. And we will give you the praise and the glory for all things. Amen. Amen.
Senator Wilkin, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 106th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent the journal be approved as certified by the secretary.
Without objection, the journal will be approved as certified. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Do we have guests for introduction today? Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Ziegler's gallery behind me, I'd like to introduce two of my constituents. I don't see Bob here, though, but one of them is missing in action. Jean Murray and her husband, Bob, who's in the hall somewhere trying to get something accomplished. Bob was the principal of Anderson School for 18 years, which I think is some kind of a record for a principal in a particular school. And Jean is the published author of Music of the Alaska Klondike Gold Rush. Would you please welcome her and in absentia her husband, Bob.
Do we have any additional guests? Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Ziegler Gallery behind me, visiting from Soldotna are Dan and Bonnie Duncan. And they are one of our pages, Danielle Duncan's grandmother and grandfather. Please give them a round of applause. And, well, her uncle is also with them. And I would introduce him, but I wouldn't want to steal an introduction away from the good Juneau senator, my good friend. Okay. With them is her uncle, and I don't remember his name. I'm sorry, it's embarrassing. But please stand up. Take a bow. He's from Juneau. He's a constituent of Rick.
Any other guests? Seeing none, it brings us down to messages from the governor. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to go back up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Back up to introduction of guests. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today it's with great honor that I go ahead and have in the Grow Gallery, or the Ziegler Gallery, a former legislator and whose father was also in the territorial legislature back in the 50s. Today we have Chuck Dignan visiting with us here, and I would welcome him over in the Ziegler Gallery.
I believe that brings us down now to messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message dated May 7th stating the speaker has granted limited powers of free conference to the conference committee considering CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill number 75, amended budget reserve fund supermajority failed, an act making appropriations for the operating loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds and providing for an effective date. And Senate CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill number 75, Finance Budget Reserve Fund, supermajority failed Senate, same title on the attached specific points. Message dated May 6th stating the House has concurred in the Senate amendment to CS for House Bill number 59, Finance amended, thus adopting Senate CS for House Bill number 59, Finance, an act relating to the evaluation and cleanup of sites where certain controlled substances may have been manufactured or stored and providing for an effective date. The House has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. CS for House Bill Number 25, Judiciary, by the House Judiciary Committee. An act relating to health care decisions, including do not resuscitate orders, anatomical gifts, and mental health treatment decisions, and to powers of attorney relating to health care, including anatomical gifts and mental health treatment decisions, and providing for an effective date.
That one, or the bill number, I'm sorry,
25.
Will go to Hess and Judiciary.
CS for House Bill Number 209, Rules, by the House Rules Committee. An act relating to municipal property adjustments for property affected by a disaster.
CNRA and State Affairs.
CS for House Bill Number 229, Finance, by the House Finance Committee. An act relating to special medical parole and to prisoners who are severely medically or cognitively disabled.
Finance Committee.
CS for House Bill Number 234, Rules, amended by the House Rules Committee. An act extending the termination date of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board relating to the sale of beer manufactured at a brew pub and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance.
CS for House Bill Number 280, Finance, by the House Finance Committee. An act relating to the regulation of commercial motor vehicles to avoid loss or withholding of federal highway money and to out-of-service orders concerning commercial motor vehicles. Moving authority for commercial motor vehicle regulation from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Amending Rule 43-1, Alaska Rules of Administration, and providing for an effective date.
Transportation and State Affairs.
Those are all the messages from the House, Mr. President.
Communications.
I have no communications this morning.
Reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill Number 8, Tampering with Public Records, and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators French, Ellis. Signing no recommendation, Senators Terrio, Ogun. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill Number 93, Adverse Possession, and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators French, Ogun, Terrio. Signing due pass, Senator Ellis. The Rules Committee has placed this bill on today's calendar. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill Number 102, Charitable Gaming Revenue, and recommends it be replaced with a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. New fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senator Seekins. Signing do not pass, Senator French. Signing no recommendation, Senators Davis, Gary Stevens. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 154, Nurse Education Loan Repayment Program. New fiscal note, signing do not pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senator Seekins. Signing do pass, Senators Davis, French, Gary Stevens. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill Number 185, Royalty Reduction on Certain Oil, and recommends it be replaced with a Resources Committee substitute. New fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Ogun, Chair, Senators Wagner, Seekins, Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Elton, Dyson, Lincoln. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Finance Committee.
Senate Bill 185 has picked up a fiscal note showing a possible loss of revenue to the state. So at this time, I'm going to add a finance referral.
The Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill Number 182, DOL Teachers and Training Programs, and recommends it be replaced with a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senators Davis, Deacons, Gary Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senator French. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The State Affairs Committee considered Senate Bill Number 203, Office of Administrative Hearings, and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute. New fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Cowdery, Guest, Dyson. The bill has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill Number 210, Wage and Hour Overtime Computation. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senators Davis, Seekins, Gary Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senator French. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Transportation Committee considered Senate Bill Number 213, Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Cowdery, Chair. Signing no recommendation, Senators Wagner, Terrio, Olson. Signing amend, Senator Lincoln. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee considered House Bill Number 14, amended, permanent fund allowable absences, and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Senate Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due path, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair. Signing no recommendation, Senators Dyson, Guest, Cowdery. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 51, Hess, labeling of prescribed drugs. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senators Davis, French, Seekins, Gary Stevens. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The State Affairs Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 81, State Affairs, Motor Vehicle Emissions Inspection. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senator Cowdery. Signing no recommendations, Senators Guest, Dyson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. Transportation Committee considered House Bill Number 97, amended long-term leases of Alaska Railroad land, and recommends adoption of a House letter of intent. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Cowdery, Chair. Signing no recommendation, Senators Wagner, Olson, Lincoln. The bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 170, motor vehicle registration fees. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Bundy, Ben Stevens. Signing do not pass, Senators Hoffman, Olson. Signing no recommendation, Senator Taylor. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 256, dividend payment to state by AHFC, and recommends it be replaced with a Finance Senate Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Bundy, Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Taylor, Hoffman, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10 and recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute. And they recommend further referral to the Senate Finance Committee. New fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Dyson, Chair, Senators Guest, Wilkin, Green. The resolution has no further referral.
I will be adding a finance referral based on the recommendation of the Hess Committee to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10.
The State Affairs Committee considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 18, Constitution Amendment, Permanent Fund Appropriations, Inflation Proofing, and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute. New fiscal and new zero fiscal notes. Signing no recommendation, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Dyson, Guest. Signing due pass, Senator Cowdery. The bill has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. Those are all the standing committee reports this morning.
Reports of special committees.
Message dated May 6th, stating the conference committee considering CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 75, Finance Amended Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority Failed. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 76, Finance, and Senate Committee substitute for Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 75, Finance, Budget Reserve Fund, Supermajority Failed Senate Operating Budget. Senate Committee substitute for Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 76, Finance, Amended Senate Mental Health Budget. Respectfully requests limited powers of free conference on the following specific points. Details listed in attached report. Allocations with items subject to conference, language subject to conference, structural changes subject to conference, mental health capital project subject to conference. The letter is signed by Senators Green, Wilkin, Hoffman, and Representatives Harris, Williams, Croft.
At this time, I will grant limited powers of free conference on the specific items listed in the attachment to the letter.
Those are all the special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
I have no Senate resolutions this morning.
Introduction of Senate bills.
I have no Senate bills.
Brings us down to the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 93 by Senator Wagner, an act relating to limitations on actions to quiet title to eject a person from or recover real property or the possession of it and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill and recommended a Labor and Commerce Committee substitute, zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senators Davis, Seekins, Gary Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senator French. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill and recommended a Judiciary Committee substitute. Previous zero fiscal note. Signing no recommendation, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators French, Ogun-Terrio. Signing due pass, Senator Ellis. There are two committee substitutes.
Senator Seekins.
Please.
Repeat. For the Will the Senate come back to order? Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Judiciary Committee substitute...
Senator, we need a motion to...
I take a motion to. I'm sorry. Got ahead of myself there. I'd move the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 93, Judiciary, to be considered in lieu of the original document.
There is objection? You would
explain. Mr. President, the change that was made in the Judiciary Committee was to make it very clear that this bill was to basically be directed towards the adverse, notorious possession of real property, squatters. We added a section, Section 3, that also made it very clear that the that public utilities that may gain from this bill would only gain in terms of easements. There would not be any other rights that would be transferred to utilities through this bill. And in the second portion of Section 3, the uninterrupted adverse notorious use that was by a political subdivision of the state, highway, streets, and so on, was separate from the first portion of the legislation. So we tried to make sure here in the crafting of this that if there was a property line dispute that was between your neighbor's property and yours, that this did not automatically give to the possessor or the assumed possessor of that property an interest there. We did not expire the quiet title action that could be taken in a mistake of property line. It was just for squatters, the squatters' rights that were extinguished for someone that went out into a large tract of land, built a cabin, built something, and then said, because of the adverse notorious possession, that they now owned that property.
Thank you. We have a motion. There is objection. The debate should be on the advisability of the adoption of the Judiciary CS over the original bill. Senator Taylor?
Yeah, that's all I was going to talk about, was the difference between the two bills. Because the Judiciary Committee has now vitiated basically the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. See, the Fifth Amendment is the one that says, thou shalt not be deprived of your property without just compensation. This is what I referred to, and this is the reason the bill died in the previous Judiciary Committee for a couple different terms, is because the Department of Transportation came scuttering in and said, look, we've got areas where we've only got a 10-foot wide right of way. But our road graders have been going down that 10-foot wide right of way, and they may have crept a little bit outside of it. In fact, they crept a long ways outside of it. And even though these little folks that own these houses along there have been paying taxes on an assessment on their lot in that town for years, we've taken 5, 10, 15 feet out of their front yard, and we did it by road grader. It's kind of an accretion sort of thing. The road grader just goes a little wider each time, takes a little more of mom and pop's yard. Well, when the city or state finally gets around to the place and deciding, you know, we really ought to pave that road and we ought to improve it, they come through and they survey. And when they survey, they find out that the city and the state have been squatting on and taking land from an individual citizen. This is what happened in merry old England. The king used to take anything he felt like taking. This is what happened in the United States with British occupation. This is why we passed and wrote the Fifth Amendment to our United States Constitution, was to prevent governments from stealing property from our citizens. Just read these simple words. Uninterrupted, adverse, notorious use by a public utility. That's lines 13 through about 16, page 2. So not only are we going to let the cities do it, your public utility can do it. In some instances, this will probably be co-ops, because I think they fall within the definition of a public utility. So if they've overhung your property with power lines, if they have come in and decided they needed a little road to get out to some part of their right of way, and they just plowed a road across your property, and they've been doing it for 10 years, hey, they now have a right of way. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee was absolutely correct. They haven't given them title. They don't want title.
Our state doesn't want title of that land. What do they do when they come in and widen a highway in front of your house? Do they buy your title? No. They buy the right of way, an easement to use that property for the purposes of public transportation, or an easement to use the property for a power line or for a gas line. This just says you don't have to do anything with anybody. Run your gas lines wherever you want to, run your roads wherever you want to, and unless somebody comes forward within 10 years, you own it, State of Alaska. You own it, Chugach Electric. You own it, City of Wrangell. You don't have to compensate the property owner from which you stole the property. Since medieval England, for crying out loud, and the invention of the common law, we have never allowed the sovereign to take by adverse possession. If the sovereign was going to take from you, the sovereign had to compensate you for that taking. And that's why we wrote in the Fifth Amendment that you would not be deprived of your property without just compensation. And from that comes the doctrines of eminent domain, where a municipality, a city, a state that is sovereign comes in and says, look, we need to build I-5 here, we're sorry about it, but we're going to have the property appraised, and you get to have your appraiser, and we're going to figure out real quick here what the value of the property is, and we're giving you a check because we're taking your home. Not anymore. Not if this legislature today adopts the Judiciary Committee substitute. There is nothing that constrains government at that point to go out and get rights of way. In fact, there's a lot that would encourage governments and municipalities in this state to go out and just take what they need. And let's see if those little people have guts enough to bring a lawsuit against us. Because if they don't bring a lawsuit for 10 years, we're home free, folks. We own it. Isn't it interesting that this legislation is to destroy the rights of an adverse possessor? And yet in the very same document that we're destroying the rights of a citizen to adversely possess, we're granting to the state and to the utilities the right of adverse possession. You talk about a schizophrenic or duplicitous piece of legislation. I've seldom seen anything that comes close to this one. It's okay for the king to take. It's okay for the utility to take. But read the first four paragraphs of this bill, and it's not okay for you to take. Let me give you a little one last shot on what adverse possession is all about, because it's a good concept. It's not a bad one. It requires all property owners to be vigilant about their property. It also provides for finality when it comes to title. Your property that you own today may have been adversely acquired, or some part of it may have been 30, 40, 50 years ago. You pass this thing, and for crying out loud, any ancestor who can claim that they, in good faith, were seized or possessed of this property, they can come forward at any time. There is no limitation on them claiming title. You see, your current ownership of your property may just be based on adverse. What happens when that ancestor shows up and says, my people used to live here. I've got a right now to evict and eject you from your property. We're granting an expansion on the one hand of adverse possession far beyond any court, any society has ever done. We're removing it from the normal citizen's right. And that I submit to you is because what we're really doing is we're trying to protect a group of very large private landowners in the state from having the same obligations that you and I have had all our lives. That's why there are certain people pushing and sponsoring this legislation. But the differential between, the significant difference between the judiciary version and the version that came to them is the addition of granting both the utilities and the cities and state of Alaska the right to adversely take your property in total violation of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. And for that reason, I would submit that you don't want to adopt the judiciary version.
Thank you. Brief at ease, please. Would the Senate come back to order, please? Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I withdraw my motion for the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I make move and ask unanimous consent that the bill be returned to rules for further consideration.
Is there objection to Senate Bill 93 being returned to rules? Mr. Minority
Leader. Can we have an at ease, please?
Brief at ease. The Senate come to order. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I remove my objection.
The objection is removed, so Senate Bill 93 will be returned to the Rules Committee. Brings us down to the next item on the calendar.
Senate Bill number 128 by Senator Cowdery, an act relating to licensing common carriers to dispense alcoholic beverages and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill. New fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senators Davis, French, Deakins, Gary Stevens. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute. New fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Taylor, Olson. There's a Finance Committee substitute.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance CS will be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is one amendment by Senator Cowdery.
Senator Cowdery.
Yes, I move and ask unanimous consent that amendment be adopted as amendment number one.
There is objection.
Thank you. This amendment gives common carriers the choice, and I stress the choice in which method they use to renew their liquor license. Some airlines that serve many communities but only serve alcohol on a few flights that use just one specific plane. And this amendment kind of addresses the small carriers. And they can either use either license by community served or by the individual aircraft. And that's what this amendment does. And we have the support of the small operators.
Is the objection maintained? Senator Guess. Certainly.
The amendment. Is there a fiscal impact, or is the fiscal note the same in this amendment?
Senator Cowdery?
Have a brief at ease here.
Brief at ease. Senate, come back to order, please. Before we took the at ease, Senator Guest, you had a question on the impact. Do we have a response?
The response is that it's covered. I don't believe this has a fiscal impact, and the bill's fiscal note covers this.
Thank you. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Is Era Aviation the only small airline that serves alcoholic beverages on their flights in our state?
I do not know that answer.
I don't know. Maybe the senator from Nome, but I thought maybe Penn Air does, too. Okay. I don't know to answer that question.
Okay, do we have further debate on the amendment? Seeing none, is the objection maintained? The objection is removed, so amendment number one is adopted. Do we have any further amendments?
I have no further amendment.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent the bill be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection. Senate Bill 128 will carry forward to our next calendar.
Senate Bill number 177 by Senator Ben Stevens, an act relating to cost of living benefits for retired members in the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system who are called to active military duty and providing for an effective date. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Dyson. The Finance Committee considered the bill. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Taylor, Ben Stevens. Any no recommendation, Senators Olson, Bundy. I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent the bill be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
There is objection. Senate Bill 177 will be carried forward to the next calendar. Senator Taylor.
I just wanted to know if it was available for co-sponsorship.
Yes, it is at this time. If you make that motion.
To be so.
Senator Taylor has asked to be shown as a co-sponsor on Senate Bill 177, along with Senators Green, Wilkin, Bundy, Cowdery, Dyson, Gary Stevens, Wagner, Seekins, Elton, and myself, please. Oh, and I'm sorry, and Senator Olson. The bill will be carried forward to the next calendar. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, could we return to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, we'll go back up to introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a pleasure for me to introduce a constituent of mine from Anchorage. He's a real leader in programs for young people as the president of the Alaska Special Olympics. Please help me welcome a guy who's done so much for the youth of Alaska, and especially Special Olympics, Mr. Jim Belmachy.
Brings us back down to the calendar. Madam Secretary.
CS for House Bill number 114, Judiciary, title amended by the House Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the issuance of a search warrant upon the sworn testimony or affidavit of a person communicated by telephone, other appropriate means, or a facsimile machine. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill. Previous zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Dyson. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill. Previous zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators Ellis, French, Hogan. I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I believe it's in third reading.
No, we're in second on 114.
We're second? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. Moving to ask unanimous consent the bill be considered gross, advanced third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, House Bill 114 will advance to third reading.
CS for House Bill number 114, Judiciary, title amended, an act relating to the issuance of a search warrant upon the sworn testimony or affidavit of a person communicated by telephone, other appropriate means, or facsimile machine.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I believe this bill is an excellent one. It allows the public safety officers to fax information to a magistrate or judge to get a search warrant. I think our long-distance delivery of public safety and makes it important that we be able to use the electronic means to move, in essence, pieces of paper from the people who gather the evidence and to the magistrates who can issue the search warrants. And I would encourage a yes vote. Thank you.
Do we have further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 114, Judiciary Title Amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary would tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 28 to 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 114, Judiciary Title Amended, has passed the Senate.
CS for House Bill number 2, Title Amended, an act relating to the statute of limitations for certain civil actions relating to acts constituting sexual offenses and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Gary Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 2 is a cleanup bill to House Bill 210, which passed the 2001 session. What this bill does is to clarify which misdemeanors and felonies involving sexual assault and sexual abuse of a minor have a three-year civil statute of limitation and which have no civil statute of limitation. To explain what House Bill 210 did and didn't do, in the original bill, in House Bill 210, the criminal statute of limitation for felony sexual assault and sexual abuse of a minor was removed. That was the intent of the bill at the time. And then House Bill 210 was amended on the House floor. What the amendment did was to eliminate the civil statute of limitations for felony sexual abuse of a minor and felony sexual assault. But the amendment did not reference these particular crimes in the criminal code. So it was not clear in the end which felonies were intended to have no civil statute of limitation. The amendment did not make a special provision for misdemeanor, sexual abuse, or sexual assault. So the civil statute of limitation for those misdemeanors dropped back to 2 years. The crimes that were inadvertently changed are misdemeanor, sexual assault of a minor, incest, felony, indecent exposure, and unlawful exploitation of a minor. Before the floor amendment that took place, the statute of limitation for these crimes was 3 years. Now, under the bill we're considering, HB 2, misdemeanor sexual assault, misdemeanor sexual abuse of a minor, incest, and felony indecent exposure are reestablished at 3 years for the civil statute of limitation. Also under House Bill 2, unlawful exploitation of a minor is added to the list of felony and sexual assault crimes with no civil statute of limitations. Thank you, Mr. President.
Do we have further debate? Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. If possible, I'd like to be shown as a cross-sponsor.
Okay, that is available for cross-sponsorships. Senator Taylor on this motion. Okay, Senator Dyson would like to be shown as along with Senators Gary Stevens, Lincoln, Elton, Bundy, Cowdery, That looks like it. Senator Taylor, under debate.
Yeah, just a question maybe for some clarification. The title says that this is an act relating to the statute of limitations on civil actions, but the discussion that I heard had to do with what I would construe to be criminal actions that could be brought during a given period of time. Is this so that people may sue someone for having abused a child or being a victim of a rape, that they might be able to bring a civil suit against them? Because if that's the case, I certainly have no objection to it or the bill by expanding statutes of limitations. And I think it is good cleanup to take care of the differential that occurred in last year's legislation between existing statutes of limitations. But I just wanted to know, is this in fact having to do with civil actions and not criminal actions?
Further debate? Senator, brief at ease. The Senate come back to order, please. Senator Gary Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have arranged for legal counsel on this, and the Senator from Magridge will answer that question.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe we've cleared up that this is merely to ensure that you can sue for an unlimited period of time in a civil action on felony sex abuse of a minor, felony sexual assault, or unlawful exploitation of a minor, which is also a felony. And then you can sue for a three-year period for misdemeanor sex abuse of a minor, misdemeanor sex assault, incest, or felony indecent exposure. And so that's just appropriately categorizing which can be sued for under an unlimited period of time and which can be sued under for a three-year period of time.
Thank you. Senator Taylor.
Yeah, just further clarification on it for those that may not understand how a civil suit can flow out of some of these things. If we remember the O.J. Simpson case where they were unable to convict Mr. Simpson of that offense, but they did take it to a civil court where a judgment was rendered on behalf of the victims against Mr. Simpson because there was two different standards of proof. One was beyond a reasonable doubt. The other was a preponderance of the evidence. And as a consequence, this does allow victims an opportunity at some recompense against a perpetrator or violator of one of these statutes. And I think it's a good thing. In fact, what we're doing today, and I just want to make sure everybody's aware of this one, what we're doing today is you are significantly expanding, which I think is a good thing, the statute of limitations on victims, innocent victims, who are subjected to these types of activities, and you've expanded it to where it's a major, a real serious one, a felony type activity, you've expanded it to an unlimited, except to the extent that within 3 years after they become aware of what was done to them, should one of these rape drugs or some other thing have occurred, within 3 years after they become aware of what happened to them, they have to bring that suit. So there is some finality. But if this could be characterized as anything, this is tort expansion, and I think it's a good expansion in the right direction.
Thank you. Do we have any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 2, Judiciary Title Amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 20 yeas and 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 2, Judiciary Title Amended, has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Moving to ask unanimous consent, the vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Next item.
CS for sponsored substitute for House Bill number 177, State Affairs, an act relating to concealed handguns.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. In 2002, Senate Bill 242 passed into law. A well-intentioned, seemingly responsible floor amendment adopted during the 22nd legislature has mired the concealed carry process without adding value or protection to our citizenry. This specific amendment has been a barrier to reciprocity with other states. Specifically, it has resulted in Alaska concealed carry permits not being recognized in the state of Texas, one of the most populous states in the nation. This legislation would correct that. Alaska gun owners will benefit from this
small but important change to allow enhanced acceptance of our permits with other states and for those people who choose to carry personal protection in states that grant reciprocity. It also requires that the state of Alaska enter into reciprocity agreements with those states whose laws permit such reciprocity, and I appreciate your support for this bill today.
Further debate, Senator Wilken.
I ask unanimous consent to be shown as a cross-sponsor of House Bill 177.
Senator is asked to be shown as a cross-sponsor, along with Senators Cowdery, Taylor, Ogun, Dyson, Gary Stevens, Seekins, Wagner. Further debate. Senator Taylor.
I wanted to note that the bill on reciprocity that that passed a year or so ago was a bill that I had sponsored and worked on for a lengthy period of time, and I appreciate the comments made by the previous speaker. They're absolutely accurate. However, to characterize the amendment that was placed on that bill by the then Speaker of the House, to characterize that the manner in which he did is, in my opinion, both generous and an understatement. Thank you.
Do we have further debate? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm intending to voting against this bill today, and I'd like to explain my reasons why. The law as it stands really is fine. I believe it strikes the appropriate balance between being gracious to other states and recognizing their permits, yet allows Alaskans the security of knowing that individuals are not circumventing our laws by getting their permits from other states having been rejected here. It's important to remember that the law as it stands says that people who have been rejected in a state or who have had their permits suspended or revoked can't go to another state, get a permit from that state, and come back here and expect us to recognize that under reciprocity. I was on the phone this week with a constituent of mine who happens to be a lifetime member of the NRA, and we were talking about a different subject, but I thought I would ask him about this bill and a couple other handgun bills that are coming through the Senate and see what he thought about them. And when I explained it to him, I explained to him that our law recognizes other states' permits except for folks who've had their permits rejected here or suspended here. He said, oh, that makes sense. And so I was just happy to hear that sort of the man on the street understands what this law does and what it does right now. Finally, I guess I want to talk about the one state that's rejected our permits or is rejecting reciprocity because of the problem with this, and that's the state of Texas. And with all due respect to the great state of Texas, I guess I'm unwilling to forego our judgment in favor of theirs, because their position is that since we don't honor their permits, and I'll just read from the letter they sent us, so if I may, with your permission, Mr. President, according to Lois Beattie, the manager of the Crime Records Service legal staff in Texas, she said, according to correspondence with the Alaska Department of Safety, Alaska will not recognize a Texas license if the license holder has had an application in Alaska rejected or had a permit revoked or suspended by Alaska. Based on the fact that Alaska does not recognize all Texas licenses, the requirement of Texas government code cannot be fulfilled, and the department cannot enter into a reciprocity agreement with the state of Alaska. Well, my suggestion is, why doesn't Texas change their law to be just as commonsensical as ours? Why doesn't Texas change their law to say that if you've had an application rejected in Texas and you go to some other state and get a permit there, we're not going to recognize your permits either? And we could all enter into the same sort of state of awareness, which says that some people, felons, criminals, and so forth, some people who have their permits taken away, people who are caught, you know, drunk with a gun, people who have their permits taken away for good reason, for the public safety of the rest of us, can't run to another state and get a permit and come back and expect to have it honored. So I think this is a good law as it stands. It protects gun owners. It protects their right to carry guns. I'm fully in support of that, and I think the law as it stands is the way it should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have further debate? Senator Seekins.
Wrap up, Mr. President. Thank you. The part of the bill that my good friend from Anchorage did not read was that the department, meaning Texas, will negotiate reciprocity agreements with states that recognizes a license issued in Texas. The likelihood that someone who had their application rejected or their permit revoked in the state of Alaska, being able to survive
the background investigation in Texas is nil. And that's why we think this is good policy.
Thank you. Do we have any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 177, State Affairs, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
18 yeas, 2 nays.
By a vote of 18 yeas, 2 nays, committee substitute for sponsor substitute, House Bill 177, State Affairs, has passed the Senate.
Citation. Honoring Aurora Borealis Charter School and staff. Honoring Judith Andrade.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Moving to ask unanimous consent the citation calendar be approved as read by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the citations will be approved. Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Chairman, I give notice of my reconsideration on CSS. Let me see here. How many S's do I have? CSSSHB 177.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 177. Do we have that completes the daily calendar? Brings us down to unfinished business. At this time, I am going to grant powers of free conference committee. No, actually, let's see, I did that already. Do we have any other unfinished business? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee referral on Senate Bill 149, whose title is an act relating to timber and to the sale of timber by the state, be waived from finance. I have all committee members' approval, and it has a zero fiscal impact.
Okay, the senator has moved that bill. Could you state the bill number one more time?
Yes, Mr. President. Senate Bill 149.
Senate Bill 149 be waived from the Finance Committee. Is there objection? Seeing none, that will move to the next committee referral. Any other unfinished business? Brings us down then to announcements. Do we have announcements? Special orders? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This morning we heard that last night, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to speak on the medical condition of a special friend of ours here.
Without objection, go ahead.
This morning we got word that during the night, Representative Reggie Jewell from Kotzebue apparently had a cardiac event. He is at this time in Anchorage undergoing a laboratory test to confirm what has gone on. His wife, Linda, is there with him. And with that, I would like to ask for a moment of silence, especially with the serious situation that is now at our hand.
Would you like us to stand for a moment of silence?
Well, if you would, please. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you. Other special orders, Senator Wilkin.
President, may we return to announcements?
And without objection, we'll go back to announcements.
Mr. President, Senate Finance is in recess. We will reconvene today at 5:30 for the three bills that are scheduled, and I expect it'll take about an hour and a half.
Okay. Are there any other announcements while we're there? Seeing none, it takes us back to special orders. Senator Olson. Special orders.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I would make a motion to ask unanimous consent that under special orders I speak about the public process.
Without objection, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. President, in my 13 years here in Juneau, in the House and Senate bodies, I have not been as upset about a public process as I was yesterday. We had, Mr. President, Senate Bill 213, which was the Connect Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, read across yesterday afternoon. We had a Transportation Committee hearing on that same bill that afternoon. And, Mr. President, when it came to us, it didn't even have a number on it. it was just more or less a draft. It was just introduced yesterday. It's 12 pages long. I had not had the opportunity to review the 12 pages to formulate my questions that I had on it. That is not in my district, but I know that that is something that the Anchorage and Matsu areas have been discussing for quite some time, as well as the congressional delegation. And so I wanted to be educated about the issue, and as my obligation on a standing committee is to ask the questions and to feel comfortable enough to move it out of committee. Well, Mr. President, we had no public testimony other than those that were asked to testify from the department, but the public didn't have ample time to be even notified. I wasn't aware yesterday morning when I came to this floor that that was a major piece of legislation that was going through. And I guess I would have no problem if it went to another standing committee where the public could be heard, that I could listen to what the public's concerns were. But the next stop is in finance, and I would doubt if finance is going to have the time to listen to the general public about this piece of legislation. There were a lot of unanswered questions, Mr. President, that were asked, and one of those was the fiscal note. I was told that it was a federal, that would be federal receipts, but in fact, in the fiscal note, it is the CIP receipts. And then when I looked up after the meeting, the capital budget request from DOT, there is money in there for the Connect Arm Crossing environmental impact statement, because it says that it is a state match required. That wasn't answered in the meeting. A question about whether Anchorage and Matsu will even have input into this whole process is questionable. There's a three-person authority, which is independent of the state, that they have their own autonomy. So we have no say in the bonding. We have no say in any part of that. And the question was raised whether Anchorage and Matsu would have a say, and it would be through the public process of hearing what they, Matsu and Anchorage, had to offer in that public process through, I guess, a study or something that is going to be done. But, Mr. President, I just really caution us as the leaders throughout the state that we allow people an opportunity to be heard. Whether we take their advice, that's up to us to determine, but at least to hear what the general public has to say. This particular piece of legislation is going to whip through the Senate in these final few days that we have left, and I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm not even going to guess on the other side. But if we are to be an honorable entity here of legislators, of the leaders, then I think we have to act that way. And this particular piece of legislation...
Senator Ogun, state your point.
Sir, apologies to my good friend from Ampart, but we're not supposed to impugn someone's character, and we're getting really close on that. So her assertion is that there was something dishonorable going on.
I don't think she meant to impugn, but if you'd just be careful, Senator.
Mr. President, and I do apologize if any senator has taken it that way. I don't intend it that way. I'm just saying that we must allow the public's voice into our system, and that for us to slow down a bit, that as we're going through these final days, that we ensure that the public has input. And I thank you, Mr. President, for the opportunity to speak to the body under special orders on this.
Senator Cowdery, under special orders?
Yeah, on the same subject, please.
Without objection.
Yes, we did have that hearing yesterday, and there was a finance part of the bill is in finance now. And we have had the Matsu Valley, the Wasilla, the railroad. We did have public testimony online yesterday, past senator. But anyway, I don't know how he got a hold of the information, but somehow he did. But anyway, to say that this hasn't been out there, and I was asked, and I've
ordered that all the resolutions from the city of Anchorage, from the assembly, Palmer, we have quite a group that have had that have attended hearings in the past and discussed this. And so we passed the bill on to finance because I thought our role was to whether we should have the authority. I think I believed and we had the votes to pass it out, and that's where we're at. And I believe it's a good bill. Something should be passed with full speed.
Do we have any additional special orders, Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to speak on a virulent virus.
Without objection. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Last night I had the opportunity to go ahead and attend a presentation that was done by the Center for Disease Control here in Juneau out at the hospital, and he was giving us the latest information that has to do with something that we've been watching very closely, especially those of us that were in Canada during the first couple days of the SARS virus epidemic that has hit there. He pointed out some very interesting things, and certainly as he wound up his presentation, I realized, and he pointed out to us, how important we as a legislative body are affected or are going to be affected, will affect or are going to be affected by something as significant as this. First of all, I'd just like to point out that on February 22nd, the first reports of a significant respiratory problem was reported by five people that were together in a Hong Kong hotel because of the virulence of the disease. On the 25th of February, they had their first death there in Hong Kong. Shortly thereafter, it was reported that one of the five people that were initially involved with the that were involved at the hotel traveled on to Toronto, became sick, and then died 3 days later. After, at this point, the CDC got involved, started going back to Hong Kong, and on the 12th of March, a global alert was put out that there was indeed something going on. At that time, many of the labs throughout the Western world especially got involved trying to figure out what was going on. On the 19th of March, the first reported case here in the United States was made known, and as of March 1st, the probable cases throughout the world in China numbered 3,460. In Hong Kong itself, measured 1,589. In Canada, they had 348. And of note there, they had 23 deaths there in Canada. The United States had a total of 289 cases, which peaked, according to the studies, on March 30th. And one thing to note is that of significance is that there were no deaths and have been no reported deaths due to the SARS virus here in the United States. Just a short preview on what the virus is. It's called by the virologist a coronavirus, which is actually made up or subdivided into three separate families. The fourth of, and now there's a fourth there of which this single-stranded RNA virus is a part of. Interesting thing is that a third of all the common colds of upper respiratory infections, especially, are of the coronavirus type. It's spread through two major modes of transmission, one of which is the respiratory tract. If somebody's either coughing, sneezing, or has some type of particulate display, or the other is the fecal-oral route, which is because the virus can be shed into the gastrointestinal tract, it can be transmitted along that route. The incubation period is between 5 and 10 days. Obviously, the average is around, I'm sorry, incubation period is between 2 and 10 days. This virus is known to be quite virulent and is fairly hardy, mostly because it is one of the few viruses that we know that's able to go ahead and survive on a flat surface despite being dried out for more than 24 hours. The classification right now of SARS is two. The first one is you are a suspected case if you have a moderate respiratory illness, and you have a probable case if your illness then becomes a severe respiratory illness and has been there since February 1st of 2003. There are a number of other stages of the disease. People that have been tested for coronavirus have shown signs of the virus within their body, and they remain asymptomatic, and there's obviously no idea on how many people those are. There's the moderate stage, which people have a temperature of over 100.4 degrees, have shortness of breath, may have hypoxia, cough, and the severe disease shows the same type of symptoms but has an x-ray evidence of pneumonia. Now, obviously, the confirmation for this is the type-specific antibody to the SARS virus, which is in the body for longer than 21 days. At this point, there's no treatment for it except for supportive treatment where you make sure that the patient is
crop adequately hydrated. There are two ways that it is being looked at, especially in Toronto. They are quarantining some of the people that are there. These are the well people who have been exposed to a confirmed SARS patient. For those people that are isolated, these are symptomatic patients who have also been exposed to a SARS patient. And it should be noted that Alaska, because of its central location and having a number of flights from Asia, has been looked at very closely. And there, on April 7th, 2003, we have Alaska's only suspected SARS patient, where a 51-year-old cargo airline crew member flew in from Hong Kong, had a temperature, had some coughs, and questionable shortness of breath. And on X-ray, he had some what's called atelectatic changes on his X-ray, which is somewhat suspicious. So he actually joined the suspected group. At this point, it's inconclusive. One thing to note, he did not die. Thank God for that. And I guess the way it affects us here as a legislature is that one of the reasons for the idea that there was no deaths is that when the SARS virus did hit us, the CDC had just been geared up for the anthrax issue that was very evident. We know that the nation's capital was involved with that, and because of that, the CDC program had been up and running, had a fair amount of momentum, had personnel and people in place to go ahead and deal with the virus when it first came in. And if you look at the situation that was there in Canada, we saw a quite different effect and final result, unfortunately, and was thought that due to Canada's economic condition, the CDC program funding was cut, so that the SARS virus, when it hit our international neighbor, they caught them off guard and behind the power curve. Because of that, the SARS epidemic got a significant head start, which prompted the World Health Organization to put out a travel advisory that lasted for some 6 days. During this period of time, a number of major events were going on in Canada and they were subsequently canceled. With this profound negative effect on the nation's economy, we have no way of measuring it. How it affects us here is that if for some reason we do not have that same type of program in place, certainly all the places here in Southeast Alaska, where the cruise ship industry is so dependent on this economic input, that we do not suffer that same plight that we saw there in Canada. Because after it was over, I went up to the presenter. I introduced myself as a physician. I asked the presenter, what would you do if we do suspect something, do we suspect some patient that has the virus? He said, the first thing to do is go ahead and call your state health department. So there's a fair amount of responsibility that we as legislators here to make sure that our health departments are adequately funded so that we don't have the same, or so that hopefully we will have the same good result that we have had here in the United States with no deaths in spite of the almost 300 cases that have come across. Obviously, with Juneau here in particular, where we only got the one hospital, there was, in an extreme case, they would, if a SARS patient or if we did have an epidemic where they thought there was a problem, a hospital closure is not one of the things we want to be thinking about. So with that, Mr. President, I want to go ahead and state that there certainly was a lot of information that came there, and in the interest of time, I'd like to hold this brief. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to go ahead and answer some of them up in my office, or if we can just or refer you on to the CDC people there in Anchorage, because there's an active office. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you. Do we have any other special orders? Seeing none, Mr. Majority Leader.
Move the Senate standard adjournment to 11 a.m. Thursday, May the 8th.
11 a.m. on Thursday.